Elvis. Elvis.
I can unlock it if you want.
I found it. Thank you. Thank you. Oh, you got the fancy pen. No, I don't have one. No, yeah. Workman's comp.
Right. Do you think I should open up those doors? You pull the one from
there? Sure. Yeah. I guess it can't hurt. So, I'm just curious, who's picking the first song for karaoke? This is a karaoke bar, right?
Let's see how far we get on our agenda.
Yeah. If we start the karaoke, or maybe we have the meeting after the karaoke.
Yeah,
let's see. Who's going to be the pledge person today? I'm like, Maybe Justin. What's her name?
Deanne. Susino.
What's her last name?
Susino.
The blonde?
Yeah.
Should I ask her to do the pledge? Huh? Diane?
Deanne.
Susino.
S-U-S-I-N-O.
Got it. And where's she from, Mandela? Okay.
Good afternoon, everyone. It is now 1:30, so we'll get ready to start. We'll call the meeting to order.
I'm calling the LERIC regular meeting to order at 1:33 on October 19th, 2018. So can we have Deanne Susino from Montebello lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance? Alice said it was okay. Thank you. So our first item is approval of the agenda. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Can I get a second?
Second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Do we have any public speakers today?
Not yet.
Oh, sorry. I jumped. Is there a motion to approve the minutes for the September 21st, 2018 regular board meeting and special meeting board workshop?
So moved.
Can I get a second?
Second.
Discussion, I think there's a couple of just, 3.5 lists that Allison Tomura and Miss Angel Vita Montes did that presentation, but I think you did it, Adrian, and they weren't here, right?
I did it.
Right, but it says that they presented, so that should just be accurate, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. Awesome. That was, I read it.
So what's the thing with amendment?
So just to approve the...
the change?
Yeah, with the accepted amendment. Accept the change.
Can I get a motion to accept the minutes with the change?
Yeah, I think... I why don't you just say that the... that I, as the person who made the motion and the second, accepts the amendment. So we don't need to. We just indicate that the minutes were approved as amended.
Okay. And so we don't need to vote.
No, we should just vote. Okay.
So can I have a vote to accept the minutes as amended?
Right.
Got it.
Aye.
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 Motion carries. Now we have speakers or no speakers.
No speakers.
Okay. The next item on the agenda is a program's update on innovation and best practices. Today we have a presentation from Mark Cavanaugh and Barbara Choi Milling from LAUSD. Hi. Since you were where?
our rationale for high school moving to this distance learning is pretty simple. Actually, we're just beginning our third year, and last year was, you know, really took off. As I said, the rationale is simple. We want to bring in instruction to students who are barred because of lack of money. They're barred because of lack of time. They're barred because of lack of transportation. We want to be able to bring instruction to students who are concurrently enrolled in other programs. And most of all, we want to accelerate the achievement of this credential that's stackable for employment, job training, and college. Also, I think it's always interesting in terms of an agency or institution's enrollment to think in terms of not only the students who are there, but the students who are not there. You know, we haven't become our students or haven't stayed. And part of the rationale for high school equivalency distance learning is to attract students that might not otherwise have been our students. This year, we're able to really offer our teachers a choice in terms of the curriculum. We have two HISEC online solutions. That's the second one on the slide. One is at Mensum, and this is a very big program. It's very comprehensive. It provides diagnostic and prescription for remediation all the way down to the ADE level in reading, writing, and math. The APEX solution is a different approach. It provides much briefer tutorials and is used in conjunction with a book. Remember, books care. And this is, you know, so this really makes for, allows teachers to have, you know, really approach it in a different way, but we've had success with both of them. Now, sort of an essential component of a high school equivalency distance learning program is what we call the High School Equivalency Merit Award. And basically, when the student enrolls and completes 12 hours of attendance and work on the online program, and when they're able to demonstrate competency on an official practice test, their instructor is able to apply for them to receive what we call a merit award, which covers the cost, the entire cost of the testing. And, you know, we intended this to be, and we really found this to be, a powerful incentive in a couple of ways. First of all, it is a real incentive for the instructors, for the teachers, to begin to make
online and distance learning as part of their practice, because they very much want to be able to provide this merit award to their students. And for students, it just really takes away this financial obstruction, but it also gets rid of a lot of the sort of natural procrastination that might otherwise happen to get students to get ready now and to test now. And, you know, the data has been really good. We've been very, very pleased. Last year, 1,642 students had at least 12 hours, in the HSEDL course. And of those last year, 1,100 received, qualified for the certificate for the merit award. And because things tend to pile up at the end of the year, as we know, not everybody tested, but of the 990 who tested, 72% of them passed. And some of them are still, we've actually started off with a bang this year. Some of them were really sort of waiting in the wings. Either they never got a chance to test, or they need to maybe retake one or two sections. So we've been very pleased. Well, that's the program. You can think up all the programs you want, but it really boils down to the teacher. And I know that for all of us, the gold standard is to be able to meet the student where they are, to find out what their goals are, what their pathway is, and work with them with a sense of urgency. And in my experience, that's exactly what Barbara Choi Milling, who's driven from San Pedro to be with us today, does and is going to tell you about.
Clicker practice.
We're putting it in the Lyric 3-year plan, more clickers. Yeah.
PD for clickers. Adrienne, are you listening?
Thank you very much for having me. And as Mr. Kavanaugh said, I did drive up from San Pedro, but it was a nice drive. And I think the one going back is going to be a little bit more challenging. Anyway.
You can listen to the Dodger game on the way back.
Exactly. Okay. So I work at Harbor Occupational. I've been there for the past 5 years. For the high school distance learning, I've been working that program since last year, so since we started the Merit Scholarship. And one of the things that sort of inspired me for this year was a training that we had to take, and it has this graphic on it, Pathways to Success. And what I really liked about the graphic itself is that it was something that I could show my students from wherever they were testing. So if they were coming in as an ESL student, and then maybe they've already finished the ABE classes, and then they come into my program, what are their options? Do they want to go to college? Do they want to go into training? Because I work at an occupational center, it makes the incentive of getting through my course a lot better and a lot stronger. Because they see that you have a very, very successful welding class, plumbing, electricians, and many of them, they have to have the exit exam or high school diploma in order to even just register for some of these classes. So this graphic I like very much, and I do keep it up in my classroom to show the students the different options and opportunities that they might have once they finish my class. So a couple of the words that I've been thinking about before I put together this little presentation, one of them is case management. So I just wanted to go through a couple of the strategies and practices that I've used in my program to have it be as successful as it is. I guess before I even say anything, I was number one in the district this year. Out of the 1,000 scholarships that we provided, I gained 103 of them, of which 80 passed. So, and the other 20%, the number that the Calgon was showing very gratified about that, 72%, because what did eventually happen was because everything got stacked up, as far as the testing went at the very end of the year, and we started a new school year, what we had to do was re-enroll the students in order for the merit scholarship to be valid. And so what one of the solutions that they came up with, we didn't have my program during the summer, was to enroll them into the app program for those 12 hours. Many of the students, they didn't take advantage of that opportunity and to redo 12 hours in order for them to retest in August. So those students have, whatever, 20 that were missing on my roster, the slowly started to trickle in and come back and, basically refinish those 12 hours so that they can start this new school year and be playing the credit for it for the school year. Anyway, so I wanted to talk about some practices that contributed to the success of the program. And one of the things that I like to say is that our school, we like to case manage things. We have a case management thing. What does that mean? It means working with students individually to assess their needs. And then developing a case plan to meet those needs or connect with them, connect the students with support in the school in order to make sure that those needs are met. So, what does this look like? One example would be by assessing each student that comes into my classroom with a high-test pre-test, I can better decide whether or not the student is going to need any additional help. At our school this year, we've worked really hard to build a teaching staff and administration that works collaboratively in order to support student learning. So, for example, should students need extra help in basic math skills and able to recommend a math class, where I know the teacher can put the student through those particular math skills and then send them back to me so I can see whether or not they have a qualifying score for high test. Another class that I use very frequently is a writing class. I can send students to a writing class maybe for several weeks, have them get a couple of the particulars down, and then the teacher will send them back to me so that I can take them through their cases again to make sure, to see whether or not they have a qualifying score, basically. Everything starts with the counseling office. So when we talk about case management, we talk about the advisors starting off with the student and then making sure that they get to whatever teacher they need to be with. So for me, I just take the student and decide that I'm going to follow them until I complete them. And so far it's been a very successful endeavor working with the students that way. Another thing that I wanted to point out is that in adult ed, I've been working in adult ed for 20 years now. This is my 20th year. And I realized that a lot of the students, they have a very small window, a very small frame in which to work. They want to get things done very quickly because they have jobs, or they have to get a job, or they need to do this, or they need to do that. They have kids, they're working, whatever it may be. And so part of this high-set journey, and this is learning journey, is to try and complete things in as little time as possible while still maintaining the integrity of our education program. I wanted to point out the merit award certificates or our high-tech vouchers that we have. the year before when we were talking about, before it was used to be GED. And GED, we used to have to scrounge around for money to pay for that school tuition. And many of our students, they come from economically challenged areas. So they weren't able to scrape together $125 at one point. And so these vouchers, the merit vouchers, become such an excellent resource for students to take and pass a high set exam. Kevin said that passing is always an issue if you're a student. And I know that myself and other staff members, we really try and contribute to those students who really, really saw so much potential and knew that they could go in and pass the exam because we have the money to be able to do so. So it's a catch-22. No money, no cut. No cut, no job. I think what's great about just LAUSD's program is that the district made it possible for all students to take this track by providing vouchers. And I call them scholarships because I want the students to be proud of the fact that they worked hard for something and that through this work they earned a merit award in the form of a $150 scholarship. I want everyone also to keep in mind these scholarships are not just given without a protocol. The district has been in place to define set of rules in order to obtain the voucher and go about all the different requirements to actually help the students prepare for the test. Okay. Mr. Kavanaugh, he spoke about the student only taking 12 hours in order to qualify for the voucher itself. But through the amount of testing that I actually do with my students, it takes somewhere near 25 to 30 hours. And I try to get the students out by 35 hours. So if they're actually coming into the program and they're testing every day for 2 to 3 hours, it goes by fairly quickly. And then if I do find after that first series of exams that I give the students that they do need that additional help, then I'm able to give them the option of whether or not they want to go and work with our math lab teacher or a writing lab teacher, or if they want to have the resource of Edmentum or APEX, or if they want to work one-on-one with me. It's up to them. I want them to feel comfortable enough so that they go and they have the results that they want, so they can just move forward in their lives. So, this is my grad board. I just wanted to show you. I think the grad boards are important. I think that everyone loves to see their name tag. And they love to see that whether or not they pass with a high set case completers or either high set or they've done the 170 the long way or they've done GP on some of them or just one of them. So this is one of those motivating things that we have inside the classroom itself. I just wanted to point out something as far as myself being here and whatever my success is. I don't do this by myself. This has been many years of training and working with people and having people collaborate. And I just wanted to point out, which is probably silly, but a couple of starfish and some of the people actually here that I see. I worked in the ACT program, which was before called AWAC. And I know that as a group, we were extremely successful because we were able to put steps into place so that we could work as a group. We can't do this individually. We have to work as a group together in order to get these kind of results. And it's possible to do, but the training has to be put into place. And so we have people like Ms. Montez over there, we have Mr. Kavanaugh, we have Ms. Steele, who have always provided lots and lots of training and best practices, and I just gleaned whatever it was that they were talking about at the time and decided I'm going to use these different steps in order to make a difference in my own classroom. And I don't know if you're familiar with Harvard Occupational, but Harvard Occupational's academic programs were never very strong. And this last year, we've been able to make a significant jump in our academics, but none of this would have taken place if we hadn't had cooperation. Everyone at the site and everyone wanting to work collaboratively in order to produce these types of results. And these are just my results. This doesn't have anything to do with the rest of the site. So we did quite well last year.
Thank you. Awesome. I have questions, but I'll go last. So.
Well, just a comment, really. First of all, Ms. Troy Milling, thank you so much for presenting. I really appreciate what you said regarding, you know, in an effort to accelerate, you're not, you know, sacrificing the quality or the integrity of the program. And I think that's an important statement to make, because I know sometimes with distance learning or alternative instructional delivery methods, there's this perception somehow that we're like watering it down, or they're not getting, you know, like what regular students get or something like that. And I just want to say that this, in fact, falls into more of a multi-tiered system of support, where we're not treating all students the same. We're being equitable, not necessarily equal, but equitable in how we're delivering services really tailored to the needs of our learners, of our constituents. So I just appreciate you calling that out, because that is really important.
I want to point out, too, that for many of these students, the transition is to community college. And so what I strongly urge them to do, and I actually go as far as getting them set up in the community college system and helping them access the assessment testing so that they go and take it immediately. Because once they've been prepped for HISET, they've gone through all five areas of the HISET, they're ready to go. And they usually are already test ready, and they're not nervous or something like that. So they're able to transition quite beautifully, actually, into a community college level. So that part is exciting as well. Yeah. Less need for the
remedial
process.
Okay. So, thank you. So here representing LACCD, and having had a pretty extensive distance education background, you know, dating back to the 70s, actually, the not invented here aspect of distance education has always been a struggle. But in recent years, I would say the last decade, the rigor aspects of distance education have really improved dramatically in a lot of respects. The technology certainly has improved a lot. And there's no denying or getting around the reality of mobile devices and how people have to learn. So everything you've done and you've talked about really warms me, and I truly appreciate what you've done here. And I can just tell by your demeanor and your presentation that rigor is very important and academic integrity is important. And these students in particular need that kind of flexibility, so it's great. Dean Mullen is in the audience here, and we were texting back and forth. I didn't mean to be rude there. I just want to make sure that we have a sense Dean Mullen is right there. Dr. Mullen, excuse me, Dr. Mullen. And Dr. Mullen is our adult education dean for LA Community College District, representing our nine colleges. So as your students go forward, if we hear of any of them who are having trouble with HISET acceptance or anything along those lines, please let us know. We know that HISET was a discussion item a little over a year ago. As far as we know, all the colleges are now accepting HISET. But if we find that there aren't for any reason, please let us know. But this is great. And the Promise Program. And then also, well, yes, the Promise Program, but also in general, any student that comes in, whether they're part of the Promise Program or not, you want to make sure of that. And then also with AB 705, which is basically now removing the need for assessment tests and remediation tests and accepting students directly into our colleges without being pushed into remedial courses any longer. We want to make sure that the adult ed students who come to us have the same benefits, if you will, as the kids that come directly out of high school. So again, as all this evolves and develops over the next couple of years, it goes into effect fall of 19, as I recall. Keep us posted, and if anybody, you know, if anybody hits any kind of a block, please let Dr. Mullen or myself know, and we'll work on that right away.
I just have a quick question about that. If the assessment tests are taken away from the students before they start the community college level, how do you know if they're going to be ready for IGRA or
Well, back in the day, they used to call that the $64,000 question. Now it's a $64 million question. The answer is the state legislature, the governor, the system doesn't care any longer. What they care about is that they get the student in the door and we provide the proper wraparound services, the proper support, that if for some reason they are having challenges in their college introductory English 1 or English 100 course or whatever the math equivalent of that is, that we provide the additional services, tutoring, mentoring, college success coaches, whatever it might be, to help them through the system. We no longer, by law, want to put students into a remedial path that they never exit from.
The black hole.
The black hole. That they take remedial class after class in math or English, and they never get to the college level, and they drop out far before they get there. So that's the new way of doing business by law, effective fall of 2019. I'm sorry, the plane. But excuse me?
How do you know if they're supposed to be in calculus or not?
Well, go ahead, Dino.
Well, I was going to say, they'll look at multiple measures. They're going to look at where they ended their high school or adult education career, look at what they took and what's the next step. And it's either one level below and 1 year to get to college ready.
Right.
So based on transfer
records.
And there may be assessment into like a calculus, or they may do that. What we're really talking about is not forcing students into pre-college courses. That when they walk in the door, they are eligible for college math first level, college English first level. Now, you know, calculus, trig, whatever beyond that, then that's a different discussion.
But if they took a high-level math class, so the natural next step would be into calculus. And we're going to look at what that calculus is. Most students go to school in a geographic area 5 to 7 miles, and they can leave the other school. There's already a articulation agreement of understanding what was covered in that math class and what it equates to at college. So it's a learning point. But I think that the most important part of it is students will get out faster and to do more better quicker. Because students are getting stuck, as Dr. Miller was alluding to, 5 years in a basic skills pathway and never getting out. And that's just not okay.
And many of those students gave up a year or two into it because they didn't see the end of the tunnel. So the completion rates were less than 10%. I mean, it was really horrible. So,
and if the schools that have been doing multiple measures placement for years, most of the schools in the north, their success rates are good. Mm-hmm. They're just as well as you keep them a basic skill sequence because students rise to where they're at. And students tend to underplace themselves when asked, what level are you ready for?
Perfect.
And the last thing I'll say real quick is adult education students will likely do even better because they're much more motivated than a lot of our students coming to high school. The kids, the people that are in your classes are people that are there because they have a life reason to be there. They're, so they'll work potentially harder than the. Yeah.
So I have a couple of comments, questions. Thank you. Good to see you. So amazing, awesome program. How do you guys pay for that? Like, just how do you do that? How have you figured that out? What's the trick?
So, you know,
Sorry.
You could have made something up.
I want to hear her story before the truth.
You know, we were supposed to get our stories together.
So, you know, we have, there are actually three potential sources. I mean, last year, mostly we used Viola and feeds from our testing center. And this year, we're also looking at support, you know, AED support service funds.
What support service?
Support, you know, AEP support.
Oh, AEP support fund. Got it. Okay. Thank you.
And I want to mention, by the way, mm-hmm. that this morning I received an email from Barbara of a new merit award.
Oh, so hers is one up. Oh, well, and that leads to my next one, which is these are amazing results. With it being distance learning, how do you... So what I heard is that they're in this program based on, I'm assuming, at least the TABE to get in there, or can they, right? So, and then based on how they do on the pretests, so you give them the HICET pretest when they come in, and then based on that, identify maybe, you know, math, you might need a little help, I'm going to put you in a math lab. How do you collect the distance learning attendance part? Or what are they doing for that particular piece?
For their attendance, we had a meeting with regard to the ACOS test. Mm. And so for each test that they take, we were able to give them 2 hours of enrollment. And so
because
they start out with a confidence test, basically, it's the five pre-tests. I give them the official ETS practice test. Mm-hmm. Because there's 7 versions online. And
right.
So I just have used 2 of the versions. And then if you still need more testing or they're coming back to me from a different class, then I have other options to test them with. But so for each test, confidence, there's 2 of them. You have the pre-test, you have the post test.
But those they take, they're taking on site, right? So that's not the distance learning piece. And I saw you mention Edmentum and Apex, right?
Yes.
Right. So, you know, we have, I think you're asking a broader question.
Okay.
Because, like, for example, you know, Barbara has an AIS. Yeah, has a
roster.
AIS position.
Okay.
She has a DL roster.
Got it. Okay.
So she never is giving anybody any seat time.
Got it. No, yeah.
But there's lots of other arrangements. So, mm-hmm. for example, an IILAB teacher might have a 1 hour, you know, might have a distance learning roster, and there's work that's done in class, and then the invention work is done in the distance learning.
Okay.
So really, we tried very hard to co-enroll. If a student is taking an English class, that they're co-enrolled in distance learning for high school. If they're taking a math class, they're co-enrolled for distance learning. So that's what I was mentioning about making it part of our practice.
Mm-hmm.
We have some students who are pure distance learning, but many students are actually
dual-enrolled. And I guess what I was thinking of the your traditional ESL distance learning, where they were doing a certain amount of stuff, and I thought that you guys were using Edmentum and Apex to do that and had created or had figured out kind of like, oh, if you do these things, that's equivalent to kind of like the 5 hours or 10 hours or whatever that
was. So we have, that's a good question. And that's the way Barbara was saying we did it with Aztec.
Got it.
This year with it, and you know, Aztec's real-time sort of recording was a little tricky. So, but this time with Inventum and Apex, it's real-time.
Got it.
You know, that we have, it's able to give time on task.
Right.
And time on task is the attendance.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
Yeah, and I do actually give this work to that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I run an AIS lab as well, I have a lot of resources and whatnot, and so I'm able to take, if somebody needs a particular help on their grammar and whatnot, then I can take a short contract and have them go through one of the books with either 1A assignments or 1A, 1B, give them a pretest, see where their strengths and weaknesses are, and then write them out their prescription, and then they use that as learning works as well.
Okay.
So it just depends on the student, what they're most comfortable with. If they want to sit with me and work one-on-one, that's fine as well. I try to be as flexible as possible and let them have whenever I'm in the lab. And so my administration was great in that they were able to give me hours in the morning and also in the evening time so that I can try and accommodate
it as many things as possible. Well, thank you. It's amazing.
I just wanted to say thank you very much to Mrs. Troy Milling and also Mr. Kavanaugh. I just am a big believer in teachers make a difference, and you can tell right away. Just on your presentation alone, I come from a business background, and it's just you presented it, and then you say what you did, and not only that, don't tell me what you're going to do, show me what you did, and you can see it here. Yeah. Another thing, too, is just the way that you deliver the content. I could tell that you keep them entertained as well as informed, and that's the two most important things.
Well,
so I just wanted to...
Yeah, and thank you. Believe in the program. The students are great, and the people that I work with have been great. So it's been a very challenging year.
Thank you for all your hard work.
Thank you. Oh, it's so Lancey is going to present for us, provide a LARIC office update. Thank you, Lancey.
Thank you. And basically, I'm just going to briefly talk about an item that had been provided to the LARIC office to complete, which was the professional development. Just we have a quick update on that. We have completed the point persons team, and the LARIC office has completed a professional development survey. The survey has been sent out to the point persons team for final review. Mm. And subsequent to that final review, possibly next week, then we will distribute it to faculty for them to give us some feedback on what they would like to see in terms of professional development. We actually have the questions to be included in the survey as part of the packet. And that's handout
3.2B. D. Sorry, I was reading the paper backwards and it was a B. D.
Okay. And then you have a couple of other updates.
I do have a question just about the survey.
Yeah.
I loved it. I think on the first bullet, I'm assuming you're going to number the questions, but the first bullet said, what type of training are you interested in? Are you going to have a box that says check all that apply, or do they have to just pick one? So it should say pick select all that apply, not just picking one.
So we sent it to the point persons team for their input.
Uh-huh.
So that could be input that the point persons team can provide, and we'll be happy to accommodate either way.
My point person, did you hear me?
So just to follow up on that, given the presentation that we just heard, should one of these speak to distance learning or distance education, or is the blended learning intended to include that?
So maybe we could blend it.
Yeah,
slash
the blended
distance.
Learning includes that.
So maybe we can say blended slash distance or something like that. Yep.
We can certainly do that, yes.
Yep. Thank you.
That makes sense. That way people understand.
I have a question. I'm not sure if this is the right time to ask or whatever, maybe later, but I'll ask it now. So at a previous meeting, we had, and we frequently do have our teacher labor partners in attendance, and we appreciate them being engaged in this process. And so one of the requests I made was to ensure that we have some type of a structure built into our annual planning, and that's obviously a three-year plan in terms of making sure those voices are heard and that there's opportunities for input. So at some point, it doesn't have to be today, but I would like to have kind of a report of where we are with that and what that's looking like and maybe what discussions have occurred with our labor partners and how that's taking shape.
So can I what structure are we using to include labor,
labor partners in the
different activities,
engaging and then gathering input and just, you know, making sure that, you know, folks really feel like they have skin in the game, I think is the key issue here. Again, I don't know what that's specifically going to look like. I know we've had various structures we've utilized in the past, but I just want to make sure there's some planning going into that. And if so, what is that looking like so far?
Adrian, okay, and then you decide.
Thank you. So, first of all, I just want to include a comment that Dr. Mullen reminded me of. The handout that you see, agenda item, the questions that you see, that's basically just in process, right? That's work in process.
The draft.
So, we're also going to be including WIOA plans for each one of the districts. We're going to look at them, evaluate, and then see what needs to be incorporated in addition to the information that is gathered through the survey. Okay. And Elvis, did you have a comment?
Yes, so as you mentioned about that particular part of the question. So we kind of discussed this at that point, but nothing was sort of written. We didn't see anything in writing.
Yeah, it says draft.
Right, right. So it's really rough. So we kind of really haven't been discussed other than the discussion that we had that one time. But we'll work on it.
I think it captures the flavor. We want something simple, sweet, 2 minutes or less to complete. Because the reality, when it gets really long, people walk away from the process. And then we layer it on top of what each individual WIOA and two professional development plan, which is due at the end of this month. That will give us more depth detail. This is, you know, just looking at those three strands of professional development that we talked about in the last meeting that we approved that plan, looking at overarching regional planning, which on November 2nd, we're going to address that in greater detail at our meeting that we're doing. Part of that means that it's looking at workshopping the regional plan and how, like we did last time, if you remember, we front-loaded that regional planning process to look at how we're engaged stakeholders. Union partners are part of the stakeholders, and so I really encourage you to voice that concern at that point, because our facilitator will be there, and that will be brought forward in all of our planning with that.
So that, just so you know, that hasn't gone out to the whole executive team yet. So that.
And I'll just while I'm remembering it, because I might forget later. Ms. Lee, please remind me that we want to make sure, and I think give some special attention and focus to our stakeholders again, because we need to do that.
As you'll remember, Mr. Stark, we had a full hour, you know, where we brought all the different union partners together. Ms. Lee was on the conference call with the facilitator, which I think was very helpful, and we did bring that up as well.
Right.
So it is, you know, we can't give you that exact answer, and I don't think it's appropriate at this point, but I think when we have that process, that everyone share with us how that looks for them. And then we will, you know, craft that. I think that's very important for you to bring, you know, your thoughts and concerns forward at that time.
Okay. I have a question. So in regards to that second bullet where you're saying, are you interested in participating in webinars? I think I know, I'm, correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Stark, but I was thinking something in terms of in-service committee, if you would like to participate in the in-service committee. Would we do it here? Is that something that has been done in the past? where they're part of it, and that would open it up to bargaining unit members or UCLA or whoever it has the concern. That's just something, because then that would be a survey that I think they would like to fill out. I'm just saying. To be.
I think we probably need to have it. I'm fucked. I hear what everyone's saying, but I hear two strands. All faculty are included in professional development. They're not, we don't segregate out who we send the survey to. It goes across the board. So everybody's a union member. I know we're, and then regional planning, I think we're pulling out union leadership, right? And both we're willing to address. With the survey, we're trying to get a quick snapshot of what people are really interested to address. We know that the region areas that we want to address, regional planning, successful transitions, articulation. Those are things that we've kind of called out. We also know that there's particular communities and practices we want to carry forward that have been, you know, developed in the past, and good work has come from this. We want to recognize that effort and continue that. I think we have to really focus. We need to have a discussion, clearly, is what I'm hearing. How broad this is going to be, because we can't do everything. And we need to really, I think, to be successful, kind of zero in on three areas, maybe five total, that we do. We only have 6 months.
Right, but so
really have, helping us narrow that is what we're going to do.
Yeah, understood.
Got it. So we want to be able to, right. Right.
And we know with the understanding the importance of the individual, we owe a two professional development plans, that every district that participates in that we owe a two grant has their own professional development, so we don't want to duplicate.
So I think we're clear about that piece. I think from what I heard is that just Mr. Stark's requesting that consideration be part of the discussion that the labor partners are considered. How he wants to know how are their voices included.
And it's been answered. Yeah. Right. So I'm fine with the answer.
Okay.
Recap as far as that is concerned. So basically, we are taking note of all your concerns
sure.
at this point, and we are looking at the best way to accommodate those concerns at the same time that we are narrowing the scope of the work that we're doing so that we can be successful on all fronts.
Okay. Thanks.
All right, and so now the other two members of the other two LARIC office advisors will present on two additional items for the LARIC office update.
So I think we have Michelle is presenting the part on the yearly plan draft. And then Justin and Michelle Marcus. Okay.
One of the tasks that we're given to do in August was looking at creating a timeline for the writing and approval process for the next time we do an annual plan so that we could get everything started early. So we worked with the PPT team and we worked on this particular annual plan draft. And you have a copy in your packet as a handout, so because I know it's kind of tiny print up here. When we're looking at what things include in the timeline, we realize that the planning or the writing of the plan for the following year begins the minute that you put a plan out and publish it. Because we want to start to look at, like, what did we put in our plan? So, like, right now the conversation for me is, what did we put in our 18-19 plan that we're responsible for accomplishing this year? So if you're looking at that plan, tearing it down, getting what are the key components. And then one of the things Justin and I found when we were trying to pull data together at the end of last year was people don't provide data in the best format for us to be able to put data together to present it in our plan. So we thought what would be great is to do from the beginning is once we decide what are our components that we need to fill out this year, also creating what are those structures for creating data for each one of those things so that at the end of the year we have an easy way of putting data together. So that's one of the projects that needs to happen right around, well, it would happen right around now in the fall of the year that we're writing an annual plan. This timeline is a little bit interesting right now because this is not the timeline for writing the three-year regional plan that we're working on. This is the timeline for writing our next annual plan. And then the next step really is just like doing some checks with the PPT and staff quarterly to check up on progress, or because we don't want to look at our plan at the end of the year and forget that we didn't do something. So we want to make sure that we check in quarterly with our plan to make sure that we're moving forward on everything we said we're going to do. And then somewhere in the early spring, start to look at, okay, what data do we need to start collecting? Definitely want to write our draft as soon as possible, or start writing and working on the draft as soon as possible. Unfortunately, we're beholden to the state for when they produce their
template.
So, you know, all things being great, they produce a timeline and they say, oh yeah, we're going to give you that template in March and, you know, everything will be great, but often it doesn't come and it doesn't come. So this timeline is based on us getting the template when we wrote in here we were going to get the template. We also include in here, if you look, there's the above the line, below the line. Above the line is where we have the point people and the staff working together to create drafts, and then the below the line are the different engagement points where we see coming to the board to make sure that we're all moving in the right direction and that the vision for the plan is being represented. Okay, and then ideally, like, we submit on time, and we have everything ready to go, you know, by the end of the school year. Good for control.
Thank you. Awesome. Let's see. Sorry, flipping. Michelle and Justin. So, Justin, you're jumping in. Is this the next thing, the marketing plan? Okay, got it.
Can I ask you a question?
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
So, this looks really, really good. And I just would ask my colleagues on the board here. So, we get kind of our first look at this is individual in February, where our point person talks to us about what we see. And this assumes that our point person will be talking to the various constituent groups within our various operations to make sure that everybody else is on board with this. I'm looking at Dr. Mullen in that regard.
Are you asking me how we'll do it?
Well, not for the group here, but is that plugged into this plan, do you think? Is there enough time?
Yeah,
because we've got 9 groups we have to deal with.
This
right?
is dealt with in our district at this.
At the, okay, so there's a process.
And it is aligned to our own strategic plan.
Okay.
So we adopt that as a 3-year process, 3-year iteration.
Okay, good. Well, thank you for that. And then beyond that, we don't really get a look at this as a full board until basically 3 or 4 weeks before it's due, if I'm reading this correctly. Do we need to have more time to consider this as a group? You guys understand what I'm talking about when you look at the timeline?
You're talking about down in May is when we get the first draft.
When all of us together get the first draft.
Yeah, I'm glad this is being discussed. So I guess maybe my assumption, and we know how assumptions work out sometimes, my assumption is that throughout the process, the individual PPTs would be in constant communication with their execs throughout the process. Is that correct? Is that the assumption, and is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. But I guess my question is, are we, as a group, do we need to discuss it as a group before we get to May, and then only have a short time before it's due? I mean, just in terms of us from the exec.
That Dr. Mullen has is that this year, we do get the template until May. So it's like some of these this timeline is really great, is like a perfect world scenario, but it does become like really tight with not getting a template till where we need.
Well, okay, I just want to make sure that we in the board, representing 5 different entities, have enough time to work out the kinks relative
as
to...
As a board and not just individuals.
Right, as a board relative to the consortia and all the rest of that kind of stuff.
Right.
So it's usually due in July, and so... The timeline, the template, we kept saying, has Michelle was sharing, March is going to come out, and then April, and then finally May it came out, and we had to turn around. It's usually not due until mid-July. So, you know, and the other part is there's data required. That data subset doesn't even come available, especially in our district, until the end of June. So we can give you the shell, but the best shell we give you is in May, because we don't have a shell yet.
Well, so I understand all that. I understand the reality of the world. But just make sure that as you plan this thing going forward, you need to make sure that the 5 of us are relatively in sync with where you're going before you get too far down the road on certain things.
And really, I think just to piggyback on that, amongst yourselves, you guys may agree or disagree with things, but really it's got to be
here. So we want to make sure that it's going in that direction based on what we're all talking about, even if there's some disagreement right. where you guys are.
Even get the disagreement on the table sooner right. than later so that we can get through
to the extent humanly possible.
So here's an idea. What if, as the plan is being developed, because obviously you're not going to wait until May to draft the plan, right? There's going
to
be...
We're trying to get the point.
Right. It's going to be developed in stages, and maybe as those stages are developed, it can be brought
right.
to the board for review. How's that for an idea?
That sounds perfect.
And being staffed, board members ourselves, we know exactly why you're feeling the way you're feeling. We will not be that way to you, we promise. Does that make sense?
Okay, I'm not going to make that promise.
I'm not going to make that.
I'm kidding.
Well, we already know. I don't
in my day job, I respect boards and people, and I know how difficult they can become. This is not my intent to make it difficult. I just want to try to avoid difficulties down the road, that's all.
Yeah. So, what?
Can I just make one clarification? So we've worked toward the TIPLA this year, for example. Just like we can do with any of the others. I just want to give you the reality. The TIPLA came out and completely flipped. So everything we had done pre-work, we had to flip it at the last minute. So we're happy to share anything. We that is our job, is point people to kind of guesstimate and bring it forward. What we know consistently about adult education in the state of California and the TIPLA they deliver from the state, they often change at the 11th hour, and often the hour before it's due, they ask for a different chart. So we were happy to share anything. I think any of my colleagues here that we meet every Wednesday would agree. It's just that often this is shooting us so far.
No, we understand. I think it's major policy decisions is really what I'm talking
right.
about. Major.
And everything is written that's in there comes from the 3-year plan. This year was a little unusual because we didn't have this year the 3-year plan. That time was up, and this year they gave us a different template. But if they align the same way with the system, it's just cool to have that out.
Yeah. Another idea would be, if this is a chronic pattern that we're seeing from the state, that's not right. As Bob said, we're not here to beat up on staff, right? Maybe we need to beat up on the state a little bit and kind of say, hey, listen, you're expecting us to get our acts together and submit on time. It's only fair that we would expect the same from the state. So, maybe we need to draft a little letter and just, if this keeps happening, maybe there's something we can do as a board to kind of put some pressure on the state possibly to avoid these 11th hour iterations of plans and everyone scrambling like mad, to put something together at the last minute.
I'm ready. We're ready. Justin, Michelle.
Wait,
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry, Emilio. I'm looking that way.
Madam President, I like what Mr. Stark just said. So what are we going to do here? Because I'd like for us to have some agreement in terms of this letter. I think what he said is right on. So are we going to direct our project manager to work on this letter? How are we going to go about this?
Madam President?
It was your idea.
All right. Well, I'll tell you how I think it should happen.
Yeah.
I think, again, that it's, because it sounds like there's sort of this, now we've accepted this as a reality of part of this process. There's now this X factor that it sounds like as a consortium we've kind of just said, and the state always does this to us, and what are we going to do about it? And I'm saying, I think it's unacceptable, particularly if we're here, fulfilling our responsibilities, financial and otherwise. Why are we not holding the state accountable, to be honest with you? And so what I'd like to see, if in fact, and I'm going to kind of leave it, I think, to the point people to discuss, if you feel that this is something we need to address at the state because it's really making your lives incredibly difficult, and it's already difficult, and this is yet another layer then you're having to deal with, then by all means, I'd love to see a draft come forward, and we can review it and bring it forward to the board for approval. But I'm not sort of saying, hey, I'm directing you to do it, because you ultimately, at the end of the day, you all are the ones that are going to have to put all this together. We have the easy part. We get to review it and kind of say yes or no or whatever. You all are the ones doing the heavy lifting. And if this is, in fact, a big problem that we need to deal with, I guess I'm saying I'm happy to do whatever I can do and elevate it to another level if we feel that's necessary. But I don't want to make that determination. I would say I'd like to hear from the point people, and if there is consensus that say, hey, you know what, this is a big problem and we need to deal with it, then let's do something about it. And maybe maybe a letter is the right way. Maybe it's a phone call. I mean, there's a number of different, maybe it's an email. I don't know.
I appreciate the flexibility, if I may speak for everyone. We have communicated these issues to the AADG office since the beginning. But just like us, they are flying the plane and building it at the same time. They get their directives from the legislature. You know, sometimes things change from one day to another, and they have to implement that change, and then we have to implement that change. So it is a problem. We have made the AED office countless times aware that it's a problem and that we expect them to adhere to schedules and deadlines, you know, so on and so forth. But unfortunately, sometimes that is possible, sometimes it is not possible. I will have to say, though, that I feel that it's getting a little better as we are moving forward. I mean, you know, year one and two, I cannot tell you how many changes we saw and how many delays we saw. Now things seem to be stabilizing a little bit more.
Yeah.
So I appreciate the flexibility from the board having to deal with on a daily basis. You know, we want to be certain to address issues that need to be addressed and not to obfuscate too much other issues that they don't have control over either.
Yeah. So, okay. I mean, that's fine. I mean, I guess if there is improvement, that's great. But if not, I say, you know, we have some muscle with these districts. I mean, a phone call from, say, Chancellor Rodriguez to the state chancellor would probably, I'm not saying he should do that, but I'm just saying if it got to that point, or a phone call from Superintendent Buechner from LAUSD to the state superintendent, hey, you know, in a friendly way, hey, you know, this is really causing a problem for us. We're sitting here trying to make sure we're meeting the needs of our learners, and there's these barriers and, you know, bureaucratic issues that are kind of getting in the way. I mean, I'm just saying we have that kind of in our pocket, I think, in case we need it. That's
okay. Thank you. Now that it's my turn. So you may recall back in August, along with the annual front timeline, we had talked about the idea of a marketing plan. The idea had been brought forward to maybe take a look at proposals from the marketing firms, create a marketing plan, similar to elevate and educate affiliates' marketing plan. And at the end of the day, we kind of decided that the staff should be tasked with kind of creating a proposal that would include a needs assessment and a scope of work. Michelle and I went back and did a very deep dive into marketing plans and how marketing works. So what you're looking in front of you is multiple parts, including marketing goals, as well analysis, client personas, as well as timeline of activities and proposals for marketing strategies, but also, and I think most importantly, how we evaluate the effectiveness of those strategies. The one caveat that I would say is look at this as a document in process, not a final document. It's really meant to be a first step for your input so that we can gauge if you feel that we're moving in the right path, if you think that what we've come up with is something that looks appropriate and that we should pursue along these lines. The SWOT analysis itself was really kind of our starting point. It's really what gave us the context for everything else we did. And what we learned as we did research was any good marketing plan must start with context. So the SWOT analysis itself is meant just to look at four basic things. What do we feel our strengths are? What do we do really, really well? That we think we're really good at this, as well as what do we think we're not doing so well and we can do better, as well as opportunities for expansion of our product, as well as threats to our product. And when we look, and the bullet points you see here are not comprehensive. They're just meant to give you a sense of what we came up with. If you look at the plan itself, it's much more comprehensive. But, you know, the things that stood out to us, you know, we do really, really well. You know, the community recognizes that we have a good product. We have a lot of outlets to get that product into the market, and the people that take part in that product like what we do. Some of the weaknesses that we looked at is, in talking to our colleagues, you know, there may be a perceived sense that versus private schools who do advertisement, that maybe our product is lower quality, even though that's not true. It's just a perception. That there may be an opportunity to get the information out there better to a wider audience, and we're falling short on that. The opportunities we're looking at are, you know, our pathways, strengthening those pathways to post-secondary, be it CTE or a higher degree. Expanding the workforce partnerships, whether that would be apprenticeship, pre-apprenticeship, whether that would look like short-term CTE classes, and then really strengthening our consortium-level collaboration, because in our experience, there's a lot of great knowledge great things going on within the consortium. As Michelle and I get out, we learn more and more about those things that are just really awesome that people really need to know about. In terms of the threats, whether it's competition, sometimes there's competition within the consortium, and also we are dependent on funds from the legislature. We don't know how that is going to work out. We don't know the next recession, how that may affect our funding and what we're going to do.
The next area we looked at for our marketing plan was looking at who's our target audience, who are the different personas that we work with. In our actual plan, there are identified 7 different personas. They majorly fall into these 3 categories. We have students as one of our target audiences. We also included faculty, staff, and administrators as part of our target for marketing. What we really wanted to do is not just advertise to students what we do, but have our staff know all the different programs that we offer in LERIC and also bring more of those people into the fold of the work that is LERIC. One of the things that was mentioned at the last board meeting was this notion of teacher engagement and how do we get our teachers more engaged in the work of the consortia. And so we took that on as one of our target audiences for marketing. And then we also have our community and business partners making more connections with those people as well. We outlined in our marketing plan the typical characteristics of each of those groups and also like what are those things that motivate them. And then when we went on to go and look at what are the actual activities that we want to plan for marketing strategies, we made sure that we hit things for each of these personas and also addressing the types of things that motivate them. Up on the screen, I'm just going to give you some of the highlights. I'm not going to go through this whole plan. You're welcome to have it and look at it. But in terms of students, we identified some of the different areas we want to look at. One thing that we found out, we learned more about marketing, by the way, than we ever did before, and then have this whole extra set of jargon that we had to learn, like, what is SWOT? What is a penetration survey? And just like all these things that I had no idea about. So one of the things about marketing that we learned was that it's not about hurting as many bodies as we can towards our campuses, that there's this other half of the marketing that we might want to look at, which is how do you not, there's generating leads and getting people to walk on campus, but how do you convert that lead to a student? And then how do you convert that student, that registration, into a 12-hour student? And how do you get that 12-hour student to graduate or to complete something? So there's all these like points along the way that are also part of the marketing of it. So we put on here that perhaps one of our marketing avenues can be some staff training. At the LERIC office, we've been doing the human-centered design training that was offered by the AEP office. And a lot of that is just looking at the journey mapping. From the moment the student walks on campus, what happens next? What happens next? What happens at each encounter with staff that converts that lead, basically? So we thought that would be an interesting area to focus on and really working with the staff at different sites.
We definitely want to improve our website. That was something we were doing before we even created a marketing plan. We knew that it needed a lot more. So we want to create some targeted areas for students as like a one-stop in order to get out to all the different members of the consortia. Definitely want to do some outreach, create the Lyric Roadshow. We have our pop-up and our material that we can take on the road to different events.
Do we have pop-up and materials?
We're working on, we have a pop-up. We're just working on...
You mean the thing they put, but it's like, yeah. You have the stuff you put on it that say Lyric?
Well, we're working on that. All of that stuff is being designed.
Got it.
Yeah. It's part of here, so if you look down on the outreach part, it says Lyric Guide to Programs. We want to create an actual thing that shows all our different consortium members and what's offered, so that it's like a one-stop for counselors and students and teachers, so that they can, you can know what's happening out there and where to send students to. And then we definitely want a web presence. We want people to see, you know, we found that, we went to Hanover, there was this great research thing that came out this week for the AP office. It was called Best Practices for Marketing to Adults and Non-Traditional Students. And one of the things in there, they talk about the top two ways students find out about us, actually top three, is they have friends and family, colleagues, word of mouth, which we know, we're really good at that part. Commercials, billboards, signage was the second most popular way they find out about us. And then also websites, right? So one of the things we're looking at is, like, with the whole social media sense, is that word of mouth is so great for us too, that being present on social media, having people share about us and share their stories and provide links to family and friends, it's another way for us to bring students in. So, and then with the billboard statement, one thing that Justin and I do is we troll around at other consortia websites all the time and read their newsletters to see what they're doing. And one of the things we found on the Capital Group's website was their newsletter about their new bus ads. And I thought, wow, they have that listed in the Hanover research as one of the ways students find out about our program. And I thought what was really great about Capital is they created one message for their entire consortia. They have the one place that students go on the web, and then they have links to all the other member districts. So that was kind of cool that they just released this. So next we have our faculty and our administrators. And some of the ideas that we came up to them, we talked about, you know, definitely promoting our LARIC conference and getting people involved and sharing best practices and all the things that are going on the school site. We definitely want to create an e-newsletter. That seems to be something that all the other consortia are doing right now. And it's a really great way to highlight our programs and share what's happening. So we want to create a newsletter, hopefully bring some more teachers into the fold of what we're doing. And then have parts of our LARIC website that are designed specifically for teachers. As we roll out our PD framework, and we want to have the inviting teachers to participate in those things. So we think that the website, the e-newsletter will be ways to bring teachers into that. And then we have outreach as well. One of the things on here, there's that marketing penetration survey. One of the things that we found out is that, like, we want to try to measure our success of our marketing plan. Like, how do we measure success of our efforts? And so one of the ways to do that, faculty administrators, is to do a pre-survey. Like, what do they know already about Lyric? What do they already know about our members? What programs do we offer? And then after we do all of these kind of marketing strategies, to do then do another survey so we can see if we've improved in that area, so we know how our marketing is working. And then we have our community business partners. We have a lot of pilot projects right now with community and business partners, so there's just, you know, expanding those and documenting those and sharing those with people. Doing outreach to the different community events so that Lyric is actually branded and the name that people know is out there, including them in our newsletter, including them in our website as well. And one of the things that we noticed when we're looking at different websites too is people list their partners, and it's like, but what makes somebody a partner? So we have like a big giant list of partners, but what is that? Like, what is it that they partner with us on? And it might be useful for us to have not a certification of them, but like what is your partnership with us, so that we can also include that and know that, rather than just a big long list of every single community organization in the area.
Because they all say they partner with us.
Everybody says they partner with us.
Because they came to a meeting.
So one of the things we wanted to do, as I kind of referenced at the beginning, was wanted to make sure that whatever we do is effective.
So it's got to be objective and quantifiable. So you'll see that when you look at our strategies, everything has a measure of effectiveness. Mm-hmm. It's a quantifiable measure of effectiveness. And I think kind of piggybacking on what Michelle said was, what really stuck out to us is, I know you were familiar with Watchword, that just came out of the AAP office. We really dove into that data, and you really see the difference that is surrogate between people that came into the schools that had contact and the people that actually were in class for 12 hours. So it's curious to us about, well, what happened to those people? If we market more effectively, like, how can we convert those people into actually students who stay in our program for at least 12 hours to get into our class, as well as students that maybe aren't part of the program yet, that we want to reach out to, that maybe haven't been reached out to yet in a more effective way. So we really looked at the measure of effectiveness carefully. So for us, really, the next steps are a couple of things. A part of what you'll see in the plan, we actually already do. Some of the stuff in here are things that we're currently working on. But as we get our marching orders from you, if you see that what is in here you think can be effective, we'll go ahead and develop a more detailed cost analysis and more detailed scope of work, but it seemed important first to bring you what we're working on so you could look at it and you could decide, yes, I think this is the way to go, or no, you guys should take a look at this or a few other things before you proceed.
Well, what I found so great about creating the plan with looking at our target audiences and all that was that our activities, even the ones we were already doing, we already knew we wanted to do, they took on a new life. Mm-hmm. And it was because now it was for a reason. Mm-hmm. Like, if we had an actual student that we had in mind and what we wanted to accomplish with that student. So it wasn't just fix our website. It was like, these are the things that we want on our website to target specific activities. The one other thing, too, that we got from the Hanover research, which I thought was great, was just it's all about personalizing the message. So they're saying the best way to reach adult learners is to personalize the message. And that they're, it's looking for, creating marketing materials that address very specific audiences. So what we're producing for ESL students is different than what we're producing for CT, is different than what we're producing for the ESL program. So that's something to think about as we're moving forward, creating all of our, what are our collateral materials. That's another word I learned.
Because we looked at it granular.
With transparency.
Transparency. Excellent words. We love them.
Anybody, questions, comments?
So I would, Madam President, I want to say that kudos and thank you for putting this together. Very, very well done, very insightful, and actually very appealing to the eye. I like your charts and things like that. Gives me a lot to think about. One of the things I think that makes this all the more complex, and I think this is a conversation that you're all going to have, and I think it's a conversation worth having, is about our strategy in getting the message out. Because we're a complex organization. So let me start by saying that I see that one of our members, because I do use public transport on occasion when I travel downtown, Red Line, and I get a big smile when I see LACCD's, one of their schools, advertising their programs, whether it be, let's say, LA Valley, which I've seen on the Red Line. And I'm going, mentally, I'm going, thumbs up, wow, hey, they're with us. And that makes me feel good. I also like the message there. And I'm also aware of the ridership of public transport and who that message is geared to, right? Because you've got to be talking to the right audience. So my question is, I think we need to have a conversation, or you all need to have a conversation about, will we be promoting LARIC, the large organization, and the many programs it offers, or are we going to be promoting individual member districts and their programs? Because that's a weightier question. So, for example, with Dr. Miller here, my friend from LACCD, does the LACCD in their marketing promote LACCD, or do they promote individual campuses and programs? Because we're kind of in a similar In a similar situation, if we look at analyzing the two aspects.
So, as I like to say at work often, no one enrolls in the LA Community College District. They all enroll in one of our nine colleges. So, we tend to focus on the individual marketing and communication plans for each of our colleges. Yet, as my boss, the chancellor, was wont to say, you know, the power of nine is a very powerful message. So what we try to do is we try to blend the two. Although most of the time you will see out on bus wraps or on metro trains or what have you, just the individual college. But I think going forward, we're going to try to blend a little bit more together, so at least there's identity that X College is part of the LA Community College District. But in any event, our students don't really care about LARIC. They wouldn't even know what it is, nor should they know what it is. I sometimes get the LAREAC. It should be LARAEC, whatever it is, mixed up myself. So I think it's important maybe to the state, and maybe it's important to our bosses and our board members to know about that, but it's a really tiny little bit of what we're all about. So at the end of the day, my personal preference is that whatever marketing dollars we have, and you just saw me go through this again, I didn't see anything in here about a budget. Maybe it's buried in there someplace, but you know, I'd like to know how much we're talking about over the next few years exactly. But I think it's money well spent, particularly as we go forward. I think you guys did an incredible job. I agree with my colleagues here that we do need to get the word out about us. And I'm going to take this back to our communications director and say, see, they can do it. Why can't we?
Thank you. I just want to offer clarification on two items. Number one is the original directive was to come up with a marketing plan for LARIC and not for individual colleges. So if the directive is changed, then that would require a different approach than what we have taken so far. So that's one. And number two, as far as the budget is concerned, this is a work in progress. We are not down to that section yet. Quantifying the activities and putting a price on all of the activities is a rather involved process, which I'd rather not go through if we are going in the wrong direction. So this was meant to get your input so that we can establish better, you know, what we are targeting, so that we can provide the information that would be useful for all of us to make decisions.
Yeah, so please don't interpret anything I said as being negative in any way towards this work. I think that this can be tweaked and adjusted to focus on the individual adult programs, which really we have, 14 represented here, nine colleges and the five adult, the four, so whatever the math is, 13. But the point being is, I think LARIC has a lot of resources, and a lot of those dollars should go into promoting the adult education enrollment at all of our different adult school sites. So I think this plan works. You just focus it a little bit on whatever's going to work in Montebello, you know, or Culver City, or LA Unified, or Burbank, or one of the nine colleges, or all the nine colleges. Spending money in this way is a good thing to do, as long as it's thoughtfully done. So,
yeah, I just want to build on that. Two comments. And first, A+ on this work, yeah. Really outstanding. This is a great framework, really, and I can tell a lot of work and thought has been put into this. I agree with Bob. I've seen a lot of different plans over the years, and it's probably the best one I've ever seen. I think, yes, we need clarity in terms of what we're going to accomplish with the plan. What I would envision is more of a, you know, kind of putting, like in the same way we're sort of putting forward best practices programs, we might, on one campaign, highlight the great distance learning, blended learning programs at our schools, right? Another campaign might focus on a particular career tech ed pathway we're trying to build up. And of course, it's going to have to be regional, not necessarily, you know, district-wide, but more by sub-region, probably targeting certain audiences. So that would be one way to look at it. The last comment is budget. So I don't know that I agree with my colleague, Dr. Miller, that we have a lot of resources with regard to putting forward a big extensive marketing campaign. Maybe we do. But I think as part of that cost analysis, we really do need to build in what's the in-kind additional cost that may be hidden that each of us in one way or another contributes to. So one example is, I know, you know, we have a graphic artist and she's fabulous. And, you know, she's done some work with Lyric stuff. In fact, that logo was one of the things that she created, which is great. But I just want to make sure we're all very clear, like if there's additional resources being put forward by any of the districts with staff, existing staffing or and so forth, we really do need to have an upfront view of what all those costs are. And so, you know, so people know kind of what they're getting into. So I agree.
I think first, go ahead. I think for sure any district that's incurring a cost as part of it should be upfront so that that's clear. I love the plan. I think that, again, from a visual point of view, it's so easy to follow. This whole thing on the top I wrote, the report to the board kind of, what do you call these things?
The informative.
Informative, board informative thing. Is great because I can kind of see things quickly and then go here for the detail and it's all there. Makes understanding it easier. And I think that it's something we definitely need to move forward with. I mean, I think the idea of the LARIC website, we still need to have a LARIC website that captures things. But I love the idea that we're looking at different audiences, including our faculty and administrators as one of the, what did you call them?
Personas.
Because, you know, I'm a persona. but right. But I think, you know, speaking to the idea of including our labor partners, it is a way for us to kind of bring them on, too, to make sure that they're included. So I like it. I think that this is a direction that we want to go with the idea of the blending. Some of that blending stuff.
One last question, sorry, I just remembered. Is the intent to do this in-house, or we're just sort of developing the scope of work with the budget, and then that's another decision point? Do we do it in-house, that comes to the board, or do we contract with an outside entity? Is that part of this? I wasn't quite sure based on your presentation.
Well, one of the things that we will try to do is to provide you with options, right? Particularly if we want to use any type of advertisement, then very likely we're going to have to go outside and, you know, that has to be costed out separately. But there are a number of activities that are already in place, and so all we need to do is to quantify the cost of, you know, augmenting those activities, let's say, for example. If this is the right direction, then we can move forward and then begin to answer some of those questions and then provide various alternatives so that, you know, you can make decisions that are informed based on budgets and expectations and the expected outcomes as well.
And I just wanted to agree with Mr. Stark. You know, I'm the finance guy, so I should be a little more careful with the money I get. But I will say that our district, through a variety of categorical dollars and district dollars, is spending millions on marketing across the district right now. So Mr. Stark is 100% correct. We ought to be able to leverage some of those resources to help with our adult ed enrollments. So I think there are ways, at least for our district, to contribute by good plans that Dean Mullen, Dr. Mullen can work with an adult ed dean at College X. They could then go through their process and generate some support that's focused on adult education, because that continues to be one of our enrollment priorities as we go forward. Dr. Mullen, is that fair? I know you're wondering. But we should be able to do something like that.
Or should you guys have that conversation later?
Right. Exactly.
We're growing. That's
our goal. So we have some dollars that we can contribute to this as well. we should.
Okay. Is that at the college level? Because the college level is different directives. So if
you would. Well, yeah, and I may be aware of things that you're not also, so.
Okay. We're good. I have no doubt about that.
Okay. That's the next.
All right, so
great plan.
Oh, I'm sorry, Emilio. I keep looking this way. I'm sorry.
I still think we need to have amongst y'all a conversation and maybe look at this starting in baby steps, okay? Where you see the big RTD bus go by, and on the side it says LARIC, Adult Los Angeles Regional Adult Ed Consortium. We've got a program for you. Something where we start off with a baby step with a website that directs people to our website. We're not getting our stuff out there. And I have to tell you a quick little anecdote here. I visited our dean, Dr. Marriott, last year at LA Valley College. Great program on machinery. The best kept secret in the valley. Now, to me, I went, wow, amazing. How long have I been in the area? Over 30 years. Just now finding out about this. It's those kinds of things where I think we need to think about starting off, taking a baby step, getting something out there, like on the side of this bus. You know, something that directs people to our website. We're not getting it out there. And using that as an initial step and looking at what would that campaign cost. And taking that initial, what I call a little baby step, and then seeing what that, does that drive greater number of visitors to our website? That kind of thing.
Absolutely. And basically, you're describing some of the options that we would like to provide you with, right? So maybe we are a little bit piloted out in terms of, you know, the number of pilots that we have tried out. But with marketing, you can certainly, and sometimes it's a little bit easier to evaluate. We can pilot something. We don't have to do a full campaign. We can pilot something in a segment of the market and then evaluate the penetration rate and then further ascertain whether it is worth or while to go in a full marketing campaign based on the results of the pilot. So those are the types of options that we would like to provide as we move forward with the plan, definitely.
So I think that what we are also, as a board, saying is that we like the plan, continue to move forward with coming up with ideas, given the stuff you just heard us say now, and then just, you know, come back again the next time and where are we with this? You know, maybe some idea.
Thank you. We appreciate your input.
Was that, where is he? Move on. Mm-hmm. Did you get that?
Yeah.
Okay, good. let's see, one more.
Yes.
Governance roles and responsibilities report.
Yes. And then,
Oh. It's a good thing you have help, Pan Lancy.
Yes.
There's a handout that goes with this one, too. One last thing about the marketing plan. We put little bullets up here for the activities because we didn't want to make the plan too lengthy. But if you really want to know the details, there's an appendix and it defines every one of those little activity goals. Alright, so another project that we were tasked with was doing some research to provide some information to the board for your roles and responsibilities on board workshop. It was requested that. Okay. Sorry, we invited this earlier and I just started talking.
You better cut her off, Justin.
It doesn't work at the office.
So one of the requests was to do some basic research on some of the other consortia. How are they combobulated? What's their structure for governance? How do their work groups work? Do they appoint people? Do they have co-chairs? Like, how does it work? So some of this information, a lot of it we've been getting off of the website. Everybody has org charts, they have their plans and things on the website. So we get what they said they were going to do off the websites.
And then the next step that we want to do, though, is actually call and talk to people there and find out the, hey, what are you doing? Is it the same thing as what you said? And then just have a general conversation that y'all asked for, which is, how's it working? How's it going with that? Would you do it different? And so we created a list of questions that we want to talk to some of these consortium members about. We provided them here. We went through them with the PPT at the last meeting. We added them. We moved some things around. So this is these are the questions that we want to do when we're talking to the people. And we put down at the bottom the list of the top 10 consortia based on funding. We went down to number 11 just because we didn't need to interview us.
So one of the things that we really want to do is, as Michelle references, is really get out in the field and see how things work in a practical way, just so we can take a look at it. Human-centered design says it's important not just to listen to what people say, but actually watch what they do. This past week, actually, we had the opportunity to talk to Ryan Whetstone at Mount SAC, and he was really gracious to let us come out on short notice and sit in on their steering committee meeting. It was a real eye-opener in terms of just comparative data and seeing what they did, how they did it, getting a sense for how they work together, things that you really can't see over the phone or in question and answer format. And it really kind of informed some of the ideas and decisions we were making about how we wanted to move forward with looking at the plans.
And it's also talking to their staff members. So we talked to their Justin and Michelle, which was great.
They were awesome.
They were all what?
They're
awesome too. Oh, okay, got it.
But also to get a sense for some of the things they're struggling with, like some of the data and accountability stuff, that seems to be a real commonality, because you can see that it was something that was causing a lot of stress and concern about how to get the data in the system correctly, how when they put something in that it really reflects what they've actually done.
So, and then you see at the bottom of the list, you said suggest your consortia visits from the PPT. So the PPT team made some suggestions on some of the consortia they'd like us to visit. And these are all in our top 10. And we've been looking at the calendars to find out when their next steering committee meetings are, looking at can we go and visit a few of them.
I'm just sorry, is steering committee their terminology for our open public meeting?
Yeah, most of them are using steering committee rather than the executive board.
Well, they're not as fancy as we are.
They're not as fancy as us. and then some of them we notice, my favorite is in San Diego, they have super regional meetings. So they get like five regions together, and they all meet together periodically as well. Which I thought was really cool. Yeah, bike consortia.
Oh, I thought you said social. I didn't hear the bike consortia.
Right, so does this seem like this is in the direction of the research you would like us to write for you for that November meeting on roles and responsibilities? Are there any other kind of questions that you would like us to ask when we're going out, or any kind of research other than this that you'd like us to do in front of that meeting?
Yes, I still am under the belief, Madam President, that we are in a very unique situation in that I want to sound like Senator Benson here. I know Ryan Whetstone. Ryan Whetstone is a friend of mine. But the bottom line is that that's still a small consortium compared to us. I am under the belief, and these are my words, I'll own these, that we're woefully understaffed given our size and the work that continues to be asked for us to do. And so it's a concern on my part. I have that hunch, and so I have a concern of what can happen to us because we're understaffed at the consortium level. And so I'd like to know exactly what their staffing is, what that consists of, and what those roles are. That just really intrigues me, because again, we have number two, but that number two, it's kind of like comparing, if you follow sports, you've got a major market with the Yankees, and then you've got a much smaller market with the San Diego Padres, okay? Budgets are different. Everything is going to be a little different there just because of these two very different market sizes. And so it would be the same thing here for us. And I think we need to take that into consideration when we look at these.
Dr. Miller? Dr. Miller?
No, thank you. So I agree very much with Mr. Urusati. Let's get that wrong.
Uriasti,
excuse me. Languages are not my thing. But in any event, in our world, LA Community College District, we always benchmark ourselves to the next largest sized districts, multi-campus districts. Because as Emilio was saying, it's very different when you're comparing yourself to a single campus district or to an entity that is smaller to you. So I think if I were you folks, I would start with the largest, like us, and benchmark against the big guys and what they're doing or what they're not doing. For example, I'd be very curious about, are they set up in the Brown Act manner that we are all set up in? How are they doing it? Are they as complicated as we are? I think the smaller people probably aren't. The larger ones are probably more likely to be that way, but they may not either be that way. But I mean, the point is, the big ones are, I'm much more interested in what the larger consortia are doing, how they're staffing, how they're budgeting, how they're representing themselves to their constituent groups, etc.
Mr. Stark?
Or would you? Oh. Agree.
Right. So whoever the next couple are, I mean, just make sure you start with them.
There it is. Yeah, just right away. Mount Sac was number two.
So you're saying Mount Sac is number two. So up in the Los Rios area, up in the Sacramento area, up in these other places, there's nothing that's as large.
Large as Mount Sac. This is the rank right here.
We dwarf everybody.
This is rank by size.
Yes.
So could I just ask, put this out of ignorance here? I'm looking at areas. San Diego, Oakland. Where? How are they structured? Do you know, Lancy, at all?
How are they structured
in terms of their control? Does San Diego have their community college district and other member districts? What's their size?
That was broken up. Like some of these could be bigger if you had all these groups together, but they have like little small consortia. Like San Diego, they have who has the super regional meeting. They have five consortia for that area.
Instead of making them, well, because San Diego is San Diego in terms of their district, their non-community college district is broken up a bunch of ways.
Their school
district, huh?
So what you're describing. And then I don't know, Dr. Miller, if you're familiar with how San Diego, like the Grossmont district and other districts down there, they have these super meetings. So they have the vice presidents from all the colleges come together, the presidents come together. So they built their adult ed based on that same
model.
But I think we have to be thoughtful, and I don't know that necessarily comparing us to the biggest is always the best. I think we need to look at structure of who's done adult ed for a long time. It's new in our history as a community college. We never owned this event. Like your child's were married, got divorced, we're living together again. You know, so we didn't own adult ed in our district. Some of these districts that you're comparing to, Mount Sac, they've always owned it. There are 30,000 students in FTS and home credit.
Yeah.
It's very different. But I think we need to look at, and some of the schools that we brought up at the point people meeting are not on here. San Bernardino district. That's important to have on there because they didn't own it and they're building something. I think that's important to look at what they're building and what pieces they feel is important to complement what each district already has. North Orange County, very established adult ed program, and they've built something with their K-12 partners that they didn't exist before. Santa Ana. So I think even though they're not the largest, their infrastructure is really important to look at.
That all makes a lot of sense. Thank you.
Yeah, and so when you look at when you take a panoramic view of how the consortia are organized, you really have a kaleidoscope of a number of approaches, if you will, to adopt it. The one thing that is out there is that is a commonality is the number of consortia where adult education is driven by community colleges, which is very different to our consortia.
And there's a number of them that have come together and created a JPA, and then that person, as the project director, is an employee of that JPA, and then they rotate their office location every 2 years to be housed in a different consortium member. So, I mean, I think that we need to look at, we can look at size of organizational structure. I think we also have to look at functionality of roles better, because I think we're going to discover something that we didn't think of, and that might bring, you know, something helpful.
Well, and I think that the idea, this is my understanding, we tasked you with coming up with a plan for researching different consortia. You guys gave us a list. We've added some other things to consider. You've added some other things, and as the point people, it says vetted. So whatever additional things that you guys want to include, but I would say that yes, we're in a direction of getting more information for our workshop for that day. And the purpose of, by the way, the purpose of the workshop is not to make any decisions. So at the end of that workshop, if we still need additional information, then we can still ask for that. So
And just as a note, just given that most of these consortia
probably won't have a meeting before then.
Meeting, and really, from outside, was the only meeting that we could fit in. Some of them meet exactly when we do here, and then a bunch of them are with the holidays and everything. They're not scheduling in November, and so it'll be interesting trying to get anything else done before.
The idea is we are going to have more information than we've had so far.
Absolutely.
So that's a good place to start.
This is really excellent work, excellent report. We are from where we were a year ago to where we are now. It's startling and excellent. So congratulations and thank you.
Thanks.
And to the point person's teams as well. You guys are amazing.
Got to get a stick that goes around him and pokes him.
All right. So I just had another little light bulb go off here. And Lance, I need to tap into your expertise here of communication. You're a good diplomat. I get the feeling that some of this actually is work that the state should be doing. I worked for a district for a while where the superintendent loved to divide and conquer. Meaning, he didn't like the principals to talk to each other or know what was going on at each other's campus. I wonder if maybe we can share with Neil or whomever at the state, this really should be their job of putting something together that informs all of the consortia in the state, how they, you know what I'm saying, kind of like a consortia summary, mm-hmm. where this is who's the, how they run things, this is, you know what I'm saying, kind of almost like a fact sheet that we produce about our programs, but that it be done by that office, the AP office, about all of the consortium. What are it, 70?
71. Well, I say you guys do it, and then let's charge the state for it, for the template.
And then we'll use that money for marketing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Elvis?
Yeah, I think even though a lot of people haven't had any meetings from here to the end of the year, it's still public information, so we still have some kind of website where you can sort of look at their structure.
So the work that is going to be limited is the visitations. However, we are making phone calls, we are reviewing websites, we are going to have a report that is going to be fronted prior to November 2nd so that can inform part of the process at that time.
And the reason why I did it is because the November 2nd, I think, started to revolve around the org.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I mean. You can look at that.
Yeah.
We can call people too now. The other consortia are just like us too. You know, they wrote their plan and then they made changes. And mm-hmm. they don't operate the same way that's written in the plan.
Right.
So I think that we'll make an effort to make calls too to just get some feedback out.
Awesome. Thank you. Let's see. So, I'm going to do something we haven't done yet. Because I can. And that is, we just need to take a quick 5-minute break.
Yeah. I second.
Okay.
This
is the woman in the corner. Get out of my way. Sorry.
Get out of your way. I really think
you're right. It costs a lot of money. All that marketing. It does.
There's a lot of work. If you're going to do it right, there's a lot of work to do.
And I always, my cat is a guy who's also like, very hard to measure.
It's the return, right? The investment.
Yeah. And, are you paying for awareness? Or is there a reaction?
Yeah, if it is a phone call, that's another number.
Our problem is that employment rate is so low, and that comes with a $15 minimum wage. A lot of students look at that and say, I need the money more than I need the education right now, or at least I'm getting it, the job.
Yeah, for sure.
And then with so many of our students, it's completely different. The family needs the money.
But I really do like the idea of maybe as part of this. I know LAUSD is doing a lot of marketing with bus at least they're developing. I don't know if they've implemented it. So it'd be nice to tie in with maybe some existing elements where they're all possible.
I mean, there's no reason why we can't. So Francisco and I have kind of running that. But, nobody enrolls in LAUSD.
It's true. It's really true. Yeah, so I think, one approach might be, if there's a particular program we really want to highlight. Like Emilio said, remember that program he was talking about. I think we all have unique programs that we can sort of, we can maybe use the Larry brand, I guess, but really focusing on a specific program at a specific school and have those running regionally. That to me, I think, is better because if we're too broad, it's probably not worth doing.
You guys said.
So we got 11 campuses, and we've got like 120 or so of the branch sites.
So you're right. Some of that money should go towards promoting, a particular adult school
or college that has a particular
or arrogant college adult school program.
Yeah, actually, the Maxine Waters Employment Prep Center, I think, down there a few weeks ago. It seems like they've got a good relationship going with Southwest. And they actually brought that up, that was something they were discussing. It's actually doing some, even at a very simple level, some banners on the campus with co-branding. It's great. It's a great idea. Because the reality is, for a lot of students, having the college logo on there really makes it a little sexy.
And for Southwest, to have a tight relationship with the National Water Center means that when they graduate their students through HISET or whatever they do, they just cross the street or wherever it is and walk right
directly.
And that benefits everyone.
Yeah.
And most importantly, it benefits the student, but it really helps. And without any funding for them, they're not metrics or such that, that adult day student is not worth a lot more than before.
Yeah. No, but I agree. I think it should get to a point where a student stepping onto an adult day campus is as good as stepping onto in terms of the pathway being there and available.
Right.
The co-branding would be effective.
Adrian Ann's point is well taken too. We really are that big and unique, and I think we have to have a big and unique.
Mm-hmm.
And, the people that we hire, people, of course,
they're doing a great job.
It's a good group.
It is a good group, yeah, for sure.
So, a lot of work.
Was that an event? It was like a week or two ago, and Chancellor Rodriguez was there. He was getting an award. And so I was there with Lanzi. We had a little table, and I got to talk with him a little bit. And I was talking with him a little bit about the whole teacher credential. He said, what a bugaboo. And he he's pretty funny. I was talking, I don't understand why we can't have, particularly for CTE, just an alternate path to certification. As long as they meet the minimum calls for college, that should work for us. And he's like, it makes way too much sense. That's the problem. We started laughing. We're just like, that's kind of important. With some of these policy issues,
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And one of his favorite sayings.
We're going to make that in every time. Sorry. That was just, it was too long. I was like, I had a ton of water. I'm dying.
One of his favorite sayings is, "Ideas are not peers." And so, what we try to do as much as possible is fly below the board radar to get stuff done. And then we are getting much more effective at impacting legislation. Now, we have a huge mess that I couldn't help deal with the big kids that was here, but on this AB 2160 legislation with Thurman, this thing that it's a law they put into effect to basically allow playground attendance, basically those who help in research, recess, 12 minute class, full-time class. Well, the way we're structured, and the way that our personnel committee is set, we now only 170 new full-time classes unless we make some changes between now and January. So this morning I was in a meeting dealing with that and a variety of other things. The point is that legislative so they call this airport with all of our
That's true.
So we've got a pretty good in the Sacramento right now to help with that kind of stuff.
It'd be great to join forces at some point. It really would. Some really key issues that affect all of us. Sort of those stubborn things that we're trying been able to
Well, there's no reason why we couldn't get government relations people and parents together to talk about those issues and drop people after them.
So one of the other things is I was talking to a colleague. We gotta develop an agenda basically. In other words, the idea that hey, we have to back to pre-recession Now, if we were to partner with college or Sacramento and say, look at what's happened since ADP has been implemented, look at the new innovation, look at adult ed 2.0, look at the outcomes, and highlight some of these successful programs, I think that's more of a winning strategy than going back in time and saying we need to get back to the way we used to be.
We've been at this long enough now to be here to show some progress. And that's, I think, all they really want to see. It's not that they won't give us more money, they want to give us more money.
Well, yeah, it's more money than it was.
Right, that's exactly. More pathways.
What are we getting for that extra money?
Exactly.
And then we have the outcomes. So here's the material. That's right. And particularly if we really are kind of going back the adult system. And I don't know if that's enough.
I don't think it is.
And that's an opportunity.
When you marry all the unified and LACCB here, those are two systems that represent millions of people. And hundreds of thousands of students. So that's a lot of leverage. And that's a lot of leverage.
Can you guys ready? Sorry.
Yes.
Do you
ready
want to get out of here?
Yeah, let's do that.
I realize everybody else can do that because I'm checking all my emails. Did I run out? Did I talk too much?
No. I just.
Chemo? I sure did.
I put it on hold. So you should go.
Wait, you got a 1 terabyte drive on there?
Oh, yeah.
Right? That's exactly what it is. I'm sorry. I can't help myself. Okay, we're ready to restart. Oh, was I supposed to do something like
and restart. It's 3:34. We're restarting, something like that. So our next thing is some information items. Is that accurate, Lancey?
Pardon me. No, we need to go to budget item 3.3 of the agenda.
Oh, got it. I see. I see it. Grace, now you're ready.
Hello. I'm just presenting some updates on data and accountability and the upcoming quarter one deadline. So we had included in your packet the communication from the state regarding the prevention and data and accountability fund. The state gave us an extra 6 months to spend down the money. So the new deadline would be June 30 of 2019 as opposed to December 31 of this year. We also have here a snapshot of the data and accountability expense report as of June 30. So as of June 30, out of the $4.6 million, we had spent about close to $1.8 million of the fund. So we still have about until June 30 of 2019 to spend the remaining $3 million. And included in this slide is the breakout for each district. I have here a summary of the upcoming due dates for data and accountability. So we have the quarterly reports for Q1, Q2, Q3, quarterly expenditure reports. This typically coincides with your regular adult ed program progress and expense reports. And also, the final budget revision and work plan is due to the LAREC office on June 3rd. And the final expenditure report is due on July 17th. And you have to submit the final report or close out by August 12th.
So, these are date and accountability due dates for expenditure report.
That's correct.
December 3rd is quarter one?
Yeah.
And then quarter...
Actually, it's going to be cumulative. So that would be from June, the inception of the grant.
So that's quarter one and two. That represents the same dates?
From June 1st. Because the grant started in 2016, so it's going to be cumulative.
Got it.
Up to, so like Q1 would be cumulative from June 1st of 2016 to September 3rd.
Got it. Okay. But those due dates, the December 3rd, March 1st, June 3rd, match the adult ed program expenditure around the same, but not the
exact
same. Okay. Thank you.
So for the adult ed program, the upcoming due date is December 1st for the Q1 report. Oh. If you have any questions.
Thank you.
Nice. And the window closed.
See you, bye.
Way to go.
Okay, so now we're at informational items. Michelle will provide a quick update on the AB 2098 immigration integration metrics.
Hi, I'm Michelle. Okay, so this one, I'm just going to give you a quick update on the AB 2098 immigration integration. This was something that just got passed September, got signed September 26th. And this has been a conversation that's been had for the last couple of years around the need to include metrics for measuring immigrant integration. It was something that was originally proposed when we were creating the budget for this year. It was eventually taken off of that budget bill and decided that it needed to be more of a policy decision rather than a budget decision. So they quickly wrote an assembly bill and got this approved. And the intent is to ensure that we have an adult education has outcomes that address meeting the needs of immigrants and refugee students, who might not show any gains in our current academic and career metrics. So it's providing a whole new set of metrics for those kinds of students. In reading the language, I included the language of the bill in your packet of the handout, and everything that's highlighted in yellow is something that's been added. I also attached there's the education code is attached to there too, and I highlighted all the little things where they added a word. So I went through the ed code and highlighted what's changed, so you can see a lot of it. There wasn't a whole lot added in here. But they identified what would those metrics be that would show that we're assisting immigrants to measure cultural competency. That's what they wanted to look at. And most of these things are things that we already do. Actually, all these things are things that we already do that they put as a minimum. So they just put, as a minimum, we want to do these things. So it's how many adults are served, how many adults improve their literacy, how many complete a high school diploma. So they're looking at like our standard things, our metrics. And then the one they added was adding the EL Civics co-apps into here. So EL Civics is co-apps are something that we already do with our ESL programs. So now it's just creating that as now an AP metric. How they're going to, okay, I'm just going to pop up on our new ADB sheet as just another column on there. What they're going to be doing though this year is putting together a field team so that they can figure out all the logistics of this. There's also some language in here that leaves kind of cracks the door for other metrics to be included. However, these are just the ones that are identified to be at a minimum. So in reading this, it kind of looks like, well, there's not a whole lot of things that we're going to do differently. It's just now counting another beam on the chart, which is great. Another way for us to show that we're successful. Any questions about that?
No.
Awesome.
Justin, AB 235.
So AB 235 is another piece of legislation that is new. Just to give you a little context, back in 2015, the state wanted to set a goal of doubling apprenticeship programs in the state of California. From 2015 to 2020, they wanted to double the total number of apprenticeship programs. They started recognizing that apprenticeship in non-traditional areas outside of building trades was important, as well as understanding and recognizing that pre-apprenticeship programs are very, very important as a way to give equity and access to populations that normally may not end up in an apprenticeship program. The challenge was the regulatory authority over traditional building trades was being strained by the expansion. The Division of Apprenticeship Standards had no regulatory authority over pre-apprenticeship. Mm-hmm. So AB 235 attempts to kind of rectify some of these things. So it does a number of basic things. Okay, great. So it's the traditional advisory board, as I said, resided in the Apprenticeship Council, the California Apprenticeship Council, the CAC. They created another advisory board that will oversee these non-traditional apprenticeship programs called the Interagency Advisory Committee on Apprenticeship. And it also took over some statutory authority of pre-apprenticeship. One of the things that, in talking to people in the field, I talked to Richard Robles in the Department of DAS about, just to get his input on what this really means, and he said that they really want to connect pre-apprenticeship to apprenticeship in a formalized way. He said also, in terms of how it's going to play out, he said DAS is in the process of hiring a lot of new staff for this oversight. Nobody's quite sure how it's going to play out, but they are putting a lot of resources to it. In terms of how it will play out for LERIC member schools, right now, as I said, Richard Robles said, we're kind of figuring out as we go. As we create more and more apprenticeship programs, obviously the split between traditional and non-traditional will come into play, and how the pre-apprenticeship programs need to formally connect with apprenticeship will obviously impact us. And as it changes and I get more input, I'll share with you.
Thank you. I love the idea of telling us what it has, what it includes, and then the impact on LERIC.
Yeah.
is great when you share different pieces of legislation. So thank you. Oh, are we getting closer? And we thought this was going to be a short meeting. next, we have board member reports, and we'll let you go first, Joe.
Sure, thank you, Madam President, board members. I wanted to bring forward an initial announcement of a resolution for consideration, not at this meeting, but perhaps at a future meeting, and perhaps look for any co-sponsors who might be interested in signing on as well. The purpose of the resolution is really to, as we just heard, there's big legislation efforts moving through the state, through various organizations, some of which we may be involved in, and they have tremendous implications for adult education. I feel LERIC is in a unique position to really influence and drive the agenda, considering sort of the skin we have in the game in terms of funding, the number of learners we serve. And so I'm sort of putting this forward as a way to really codify and sort of in a public way say, hey, as LERIC, we're sort of being public about what we are planning in terms of our legislative advocacy. We're going to sort of mark that this is something that's a priority for the board in terms of how we're going to approach the work. And so why do we need a resolution to do that? Why can't we just say, hey, this is what we're going to do? And it's really because I think as a board, you know, in many ways we're still kind of identifying who we are and sort of shaping our identity as a board, and we know there have been a few players that have come in and out. So I think it's really important to, you know, regardless of, you know, who knows, in a year or two, maybe there's another representative from LAUSD, right? We never know. So, but as a board, the work should really, and the priorities should really remain. It shouldn't necessarily be personality driven. So this is a way to really, again, sort of codify and really mark as a priority for this board, really working hand in hand. And I think at the risk of going on too long, I'll just close by saying, traditionally, what I've seen personally with legislative efforts is the cycle plays out where you have sort of K-12 adult huddling up in a corner, hey, what are we going to work on this year? You have community college, hey, what are we going to work, you know. I think we have a great opportunity with the players on this board to really put together a very powerful coalition that's in the best interests of our adult ed system, right? Not just community college, not just K-12 adult, not backfill and restoration and all those things we keep hearing about from state organizations, but really looking forward, what are the needs, how would we move the needle, and what do we want adult ed to look like? And I just think LERIC should be a major driver in that effort. So that's what the resolution is about. Happy to answer any questions. Not going to read it. It's in your packet. Again, looking for co-sponsors, and hopefully it will move forward, and we will adopt this at a future meeting.
So I have a question just about the last part, because the top is all the reasons, right?
Yeah,
the bottom, the resolved, is the action. So one thing is, I think that if this is something we are going to do, then I wouldn't direct our point people to develop the legislative agenda. I think that that really needs to be at our level, not the point people level. That's one thing. The other thing is, what my just question about the agenda will include a commitment for each board member to disclose any affiliations with advocacy groups. What does that mean?
Yeah, so, I mean, I'll just actually take an example from the pages of our own agenda. So let's look at AB 2098, immigrant integration, right? So the reality is that was really proposed and driven very heavily by one individual from one district up north. That's the reality. Now, I know a lot of folks got on later and kind of jumped on the bandwagon, but what ended up being passed ultimately and signed is very different than what was proposed initially. And so I'm just going to be very sort of honest here and say that, you know, LAUSD, and I worked very closely with our government relations team to ensure that we had some kind of common sense, in my view, language put in around what we're already doing, as Ms. Steele pointed out. We're already doing EL Civics, right? We're already aligned with WIOA, et cetera. We, as it was written previously, there are all these new metrics that were going to be inserted into the law. And how are we going to measure those metrics? Nobody really knew. They sounded great. But when we're talking about a major policy shift, this board was silent on that piece of legislation. Now, there may have been some work behind the scenes. What I'm saying is, let's, if we're a part of those groups behind the scenes, let's put it forward and as a board really sort of disclose, hey, this is what I'm working on, or this is how a particular group, you know, is looking at this issue, and let's have an opportunity to weigh in. So it's really the transparency piece that I'm concerned about. So that's why that's in there.
So originally we were, so I'm a CAIA member, and Dan was a CAIA member, and Joe was a CAIA member, and I know that we had part of these difficult conversations during those our CAIA conference calls. So in terms of disclosing, I am a CAIA, I'm the CAIA treasurer. Do you mean something beyond that, or do you mean sharing the information that we are talking about as an organization, as the organization is developing things? Because what happens at the organization level, both for, and I can only speak to the K-12 adult ed side, but two major organizations for adult ed are CAIA, which is the administrative organization, and then CCAE, which is the everybody organization, right? And, AXA's subcommittee, right? So you have a subcommittee of AXA. So those are the three real K-12 adult ed organizations that exist. And as part of that organization, we have meetings where we talk about what the policy or what we're going to be doing moving forward. So I'm just trying to wrap my head around, if I'm part of that organization and the organization is in the developing stages of those conversations, what I can really say here at a public meeting before it is put out to the field, right? Mm-hmm. So right. I'm not opposed to it. I'm just wonder. I mean, I would hate to sign a resolution that I love the concept, but I just want to know how that would work logistically. Sure. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
And you know, I want to make sure that what CAIA does from a legislative perspective also, that all this input is there.
Yeah, absolutely, and I appreciate the question. I don't know the answer to it other than really just that, I think it's just kind of it's kind of asking people to exercise their own judgment when it comes to that. I guess, you know, for example, I mean, I think it's good for us to all know, like, what other boards or organizations we're a part of, particularly when it relates to adult ed. So, for example, Bob and I are on the City Workforce Development Board, right? I'm on the subcommittee for apprenticeship, right? Some of my colleagues may or may not know that. And so as we're talking about policy issues, this is really a way for us to identify where those strengths and networks are. So that we can, I think that's going to help us in really crafting and shaping and leading a much more viable legislative agenda than kind of working in isolation. I guess that's, so in terms of who discloses what when, I don't really, it doesn't matter to me. And honestly, if there's some alternative language that folks want to put in here and change the way it's been written, totally fine with that. It's really more just trying to accomplish and sort of mark that, hey, we're going to commit. We're putting it in writing. We are declaring that we're going to work together on a legislative agenda that we're all going to support, that's going to move adult ed forward. That's really what it's trying to accomplish. So the wording of it, again, very, very much open to any suggestions you might have. And if something sounds funny and, you know, it can be expressed in a different way, by all means, we can do that.
So, if I may, first of all, thank you to Mr. Stark for putting this together. Down under the resolve, the LARIC Board agrees to direct the point persons, team, and executive committee to jointly work together to develop a strategy, because I know our point persons people have a lot to do, including our staff. Everybody has input into this. And I think, as Mr. Stark does a good job pointing out here, we as an entity are very, very large and very impactful. You know, we've got these 150,000, 57,000 students. We are we all serve students who are among the most neediest, if not the neediest, in the state. We have, across those 800, 900 square miles, we have many legislators who represent us. So collectively, we have a very strong lobby in Sacramento. LACCD has four major lobbyists up there that we work with. I'm sure LA Unified has got an army of lobbyists as well. So collectively, we can move the agenda. We, meaning LARIC, is a little behind the curve because LACCD, as I'm sure LA Unified, has already established or is in the process of nailing down their 18, 19 legislative priorities and strategies. So at this point, whenever we're done with it, I would go back to my chancellor, our chancellor, and say we need to try to shoehorn these into our process, which very likely we'll be able to do. But yeah, no, I think, personally, I think this is absolutely the thing that we need to do. Whether there are other groups out there or not, that's great, but we are LA, you know, and therefore working in collaboration with others or leading the charge. LACCD every year tries to enact legislation. We use our elected officials to move bills forward for us and have been relatively successful at it. So no reason why LARIC can't do the same thing, leveraging the contacts we already have. So I think, as my colleague here talked about, a workshop makes sense, right?
Sure.
Some kind of get together and talk about it sooner than later.
Well, that would allow input. A workshop setting would allow input, as Mr. Stark said a couple times today, from our association members to come forward and share, and from our partners. So if it's done in a setting like a workshop, then you really allow for that input from your stakeholders.
And I guess this goes on the agenda for...
So as I understand it, yeah, this would be the initial reading,
first read,
right? And then members who might want to sign on as a co-sponsor, and then also, you know, with amendments. It sounds like there's going to be some amendments, which is great, wonderful. And then with the amendments, it would go then to an action item on a future meeting.
Well, I would certainly be happy to be a co-sponsor.
All right. Thank you.
So, Lancey, when we create the agenda for next time, we'll and then get all the input about whatever the different languages.
Right, but while we're waiting to get the resolution passed, it doesn't mean we shouldn't try to get ourselves organized. And I don't want another month to go by before we start the process of talking about a legislative retreat.
Right. Well, so we created, when we met at regarding the workshop stuff, which is actually one of the next things, the first thing we put on the workshop was the roles and responsibilities. And at the end of that day, we only committed to that one November meeting with the idea that the next meeting could be kind of funding formula and legislative stuff. So it's just a matter of us kind of committing to the next workshop date. Makes sense.
Thank you.
Is there something else? Where am I going now? Oh, other members.
Yes. Just a point of clarification, because there were two contradicting statements made with regards to either including the point person team or not including the point person team. Madam President suggested that it should be a function of the executive board to set the legislative agenda, if I understood correctly. And Dr. Miller suggested that we add direct point person team and the executive team as together cobbling up the legislative agenda.
So, go ahead.
It could not be the executive board, because we'd be sitting in an open meeting like this cobblestoning something together. It needs to be done in a workshop setting where your board and your point persons can work together and also allow for input from the various stakeholders. But if we were to do that by ourselves, we'd be doing it, Madam President, in a meeting like this, very time-consuming. We'd be here much beyond five to put something like that together.
And by the way, I was not suggesting that we do it alone as much as I was suggesting it's not a directed activity.
No, I think my statement, I'll keep what I said.
So the thing about the resolved is that any member who would like to provide or submit a friendly amendment to that piece can submit it, and then we can look at it again.
Perfect.
Right?
Great.
Is that
great? Yeah. Perfect.
Okay. Because I would need to think a little bit about it, but I like it. I just want to tweak it. That's all. Okay. Who wants to go next? Anybody else have an update? Emilio, anything?
So tomorrow we have our Boo Bash here, and that is not a program that's funded by the AEP. It's funded through our district general fund, so through our parent education program. It's been a program going on well over 30 years, and that will be for students that are from 6 months to about 8 years of age, and it goes on here from 10 to 2. It's very popular, and so they were setting up, and I'll see them all tomorrow and be spooked out by them, I'm sure. We have actually started our two IET programs and are making tremendous progress with those programs, with the information technology and the health occupations. And we also, I don't know if I mentioned it in our last meeting, but we shifted our ESL from level 6 to calling it Intro to ABE, where we really do create more of a direct pathway for our students from ESL into ABE. And so we're spearheading that. I also want to tell Mr. Stark that I very much was inspired by the presentation at our last meeting by Ms., I believe it's Cuevas, regarding the Student Success Initiative. And so I may be contacting him or Ms. Cuevas with his permission to learn more about the program, because I am very interested about replicating that here within our district. With the elementary schools and the adult school.
Yeah, we would welcome that, and open invitation to visit classes. We can set that up. But yeah, please let me know. We're happy to do it.
Thank you. And lastly, we are looking at an area that's something new for us. And again, this would be the venue to share. Looking at the area of robotics. And so if any of you have a program out there, I'd like to maybe visit that and inquire about what program and curriculum you have in place for robotics.
Just a quick update on with regard to FSI. Last meeting, it was mentioned that some of the members were interested in having a more detailed presentation or you know, access to curriculum and, you know, that sort of thing. And so the LARIC office is in the process of contacting the districts that expressed interest for possibly a more in-depth presentation on the same topic.
Dr. Miller?
So what I'm going to do, I can tell Dr. Mullen this, so...
be prepared.
I'm going to yield part of my time to Dr. Mullen for anything that she might want to share in terms of the specifics of what's happened with our adult ed programs. So I will do that briefly. But on a more global stance, our system continues to grapple with the new student success funding formula, student-centered funding formula, and all that portends for the 115 California community colleges, including LACCD. Throughout all that, though, adult education continues to be a big
a big priority of ours. The new funding format, on the one hand, treats adult ed well. On the other hand, does not in terms of how it treats access. Right now, our adult ed students are funded at 100%. In the new funding formula, they're going to be funded at only 60%, which is a big, big issue for adult education. So the districts that Dr. Mullen mentioned earlier, North Orange County, Santa Ana, some of the ones that are more actively engaged, San Diego, Canyons, they are, and L.A., we will be joining together to push for a legislative and or administrative fix to that funding anomaly. So, Dr. Mullen, anything else you want to add for now?
I met with the adult education deans last week, because I meet with them monthly, but I've charged all of them to make sure they're connecting with your respective principals and whatever team your principals identify for articulation. I'll go over with the point people some of the details that we've learned through that process. So they should be reaching out. Some have made great success and others have not. Made great progress and others have not.
Thank you. Alice?
Alice Hawkins, Montevallo, New York. Just happy to be here again. A lot of information in a short period of time. Wanted to mention that all of our stakeholders, administrative staff, and teachers are taking a grassroots approach and basically just going to city sponsored events and promoting our classes, which has grown tremendously, and I'm very thankful for that. And also with the addition of Mr. Tenorio at Ford Park, he, along with Ms. Deanne Casino, have opened up another high school lab with the Google Classroom aspect on it, on GradPoint. And we have seen a great interest and a transition with that. So we're really proud of that. A lot of our teachers and staff have been meeting on a weekly basis, and they are really, really wanted me to advocate for the SMEs or the PLCs. What's the status on that? So we do have that question. Where are we at on that? So if we can get some type of resolution, they would be very happy to attend. And with that, I just want to say that our vision, one of the hiccups, and I think it's across the board, even with Mount SAC Consortium, in regards to the ASAP, the trials and tribulations that were coming across with the CASAS and TE, trying to get all that, the stats and data, it's been really, really, we need to start looking for another type of attendance monitoring system, because it's just not working in with our respect, not only in our district, with other districts as well across the board. And I'm not too sure if Mr. Justin or Michelle, when you went to that Mount SAC meeting, did you hear any kind of comments on that? And it was the majority similar to that. Yeah. So we are having our challenges, so I do want to put it out there. Thank you.
So I wasn't going to say anything, but now I'm just going to, just in terms of the ASAP, so you're talking about ASAP, which is the attendance reporting system. I'm taking a team actually tomorrow, not tomorrow, what's tomorrow? What's today?
Friday.
Okay, I'm taking them on Monday. We're going on Monday. So Monday and Tuesday, a team of coordinators and office staff to the ASAP conference to find out, to hopefully address some of those issues. I think that when they went, they switched from one version to another, and that new version, I think they were hoping was going to be the panacea to all of the problems, and it just created some new problems. So we're going to try to figure out, you know, try to get a better understanding, because one of the things that's critical with the work that we do is that the data is clean. And if we can't depend on clean data, it's hard for us to be able to make decisions about anything, right? Because I think somebody said earlier, you know, we need to have all the information in order to make informed decisions. So one of the things that was great about this, the marketing plan, was it's so comprehensive when we're able to make decisions when we have a lot of the information. So it's critical that ASAP either get it together or we find another attendance account, attendance system.
Good luck.
Uh-huh. Yanira? They don't exist, I'm sure. Connexia. Mm-hmm. Another one?
This
again?
Third component.
A third. Well, I figured I'd hear it on Monday.
It came out this week.
Oh, great. Yeah. So.
So, actually, one of the, Madam President, kind of back to your comment here, is what we're finding, and I don't know if Montebello, I'd be eager to know your thoughts on this, is the level of response regarding customer service is very, very, oh my gosh, it's driving my staff, you know, I don't have any other word to say, it's driving my staff crazy. So there's no human being at the end of the line.
Exactly.
It is comprised of emailing them, and then I'm copied on these emails. It sounds like it's a robot responding, and I'm really not happy with it at all. Mm-hmm. And the responses that we're getting really are not acceptable, and they're beyond attendance issues to money transactions, which are very critical to adult ed for accountability, and it's really consuming a lot of staff time in terms of the communication with them, but they don't have all the processes in place, so it's just making things very common. So I am also sending folks, I will not be going, but they will be going to this, and I've asked them to be up front and just do the Amelia thing. Say it.
I'm taking a hammer, just so you know.
And share that with them, because we are paying a substantial amount every year to be able to use
for
that.
For system. And for the support system.
Correct.
Right. So.
And transcripts as well.
Yes.
Are being affected.
Okay. We actually have no action items. We have no... So, we do not have a consent agenda. Our next meeting is scheduled for our next open public meeting is scheduled for November 16th at Bandy Camp. But we also have scheduled our first board workshop on November 2nd, and it will be from 12 to 4. 12 to 4. So November 2nd, 12 to 4, is our workshop, board workshop.
At Bandy Camp?
Yes, that's what I've got.
Is that, they're both at Bandy Camp? Adrian and?
Yes.
Okay.
And what's the board meeting?
The board meeting is November 16th.
Got it, thank you.
Yep. Any other questions about that before I close this out? So I am adjourning the meeting at 4:12. P.M. or whatever date it is. Yeah. I don't know, but write it really, like I said it eloquently in the notes. Thank you guys for coming. Thanks. All right. And here I thought this was short and no action items. This is going
to
be fast.
Lots to talk about, right?
And what is that workshop focus on?
So, well, I'm sending out another meeting. I'm sending out another announcement because Adrienne Ann managed to get the facilitator to do some of the pre-work for the executive team around the three-year plan. And since we already had that date scheduled for the whole time, she's going to do 2 hours of that, and then we're going to do 2 hours of the governance.